And was it from Lowe to Leith then, or was it from Lowe to? It wasn't to TBW or to Leah Burnett then. Was it?
Leah Burnett.
I was to Leah Burnett then. Okay.
Yeah. So, I had 4 years at Lowe's. A lot of hard work and success with Vince, but he wanted to direct. He did more directing when we. The last thing we did together at Lowe's was Weetabix, Without a Bix, or Weetabix.
Yeah, great.
And he directed some of those spots. And because he wanted to direct, so there was something about Lowe's that I never felt totally at home there. And if Vince was going to move on and direct, I thought, and also the agency was about to merge with Lintas at the time, and you know, I was one of many people who was slightly concerned about what that might mean to the agency. So, you know, with those two sort of things in mind, I decided to sort of have a look around and maybe think about, you know, what other opportunities might be. So, talked to a number of different agencies. Talked to Larry Barker, who was in charge at BNP, DDB. Talked to AMV, talked to Tim Delaney. I talked to the guys from Leith, because I knew some of them from my time up in Scotland, and they were in the sort of process of wanting to open up in London, but the way they wanted to do it was to find their MD first. So the conversation I had with them was more around, you know, would you be interested if this person or that person was the MD, or is there anybody you would suggest that would be good for us anyway? So I suggested a few people I'd work with, Jonathan Mildenhall, Sarah Gold, Karina Wilshire, people like that. But, you know, they'd left them to get on with that. But the other agency that was interested was Burnett's. And, you know, I think it wasn't probably the obvious choice when, you know, some of the other places that I've just mentioned would seem more like kind of next natural progression, because they were sort of, you know, Premier League sort of agencies, really. But when I met Nick and Mark, Nick Bell, Mark Tutstall, you know, we had gotten really, really well, and I really liked them. And they were doing some good work at Burnett's, but they also showed me and talked about some of the work that was sort of coming through at the time. Things like Heinz Salad Cream, and McDonald's 99p. There's some really, really good populist work, you know, for real brands. And, you know, you could tell something was sort of happening at the time at Leah Burnett's. And then they arranged for me to meet Nick Bryan, who was the CEO, and I had a beer with him. And something he said just resonated with me and made me sort of make the decision to go to Burnett's, because he'd come from a media background, and he said, look, I'm not really the person to judge creative work, but what I am is I'm a force of nature, and if you guys tell me that this is, you know, a piece of work is really, really good, I will make sure that everyone knows it and everyone believes it, and I will back you.
Wow.
It helped that I think he was a heavyweight kickboxing champion as well. That probably helped him to persuade people that to go along with what he was saying, but a great attitude. And so, I decided after 4 years at Lowe's that I would go to Leah Burnett and take on a sort of creative directing / writing role there. And so that's what I did. I wasn't there very long. It's just weird how things kind of turned out. But I was there less than a year. But in that time, managed to do, you know, one bit of work, which I think is probably the most successful thing that I've done in terms of awards, and also in terms of how it sort of performed for the client, and also you know, just what happened to it because of the internet, really.
Yeah, so
just John West.
Yeah, you're clearly talking about John West. And could you tell us, like, when you thought of that as an idea, did you immediately think, oh, this is going to be fucking great? Because it feels like there isn't a big distance from the idea to what you could make it. I know it had to be executed well, but you're like, it's not like, say, you were coming up with Dunlop Unexpected, where you go, I'm going to have a lot of things fall into place for this to be right. It was, so were you like, oh, this is going to be great?
Yes, looking back, probably, yeah, I was trying to think at the time. I mean, it was a panic brief because there was another idea that had been sold in to John West, which was part of Hines at the time. And then it transpired that for some reason or other, the ad couldn't be made. I think it was too expensive and would take too much time to make. And they had a very small budget. And Nick and Mark were out of the agency on the day. I think Mark was on the Eurostar going to Paris for a pitch meeting, and I'm not sure where Nick was. But they briefed whoever was in the creative department for that day to try and write something that they could present, literally, I think, the next day to John West to try and get him out of this situation, this hole that they were in. So, and I'd been asked to sort of look at some of the team's work, but you know, I'm just sitting there sort of mulling it over and quite quickly sort of thought of this idea, you know, the man fighting the bear over the fish. And yeah, I think I did think at the time, you know, this could be really funny. What did happen is once it got bought by the client and we got into sort of the production side of things, because we had so little money, it sort of dictated how Danny Kleiman, who, you know, was the director, got to shoot it. You know, to shoot it on a long lens as if it was a nature documentary was kind of as a result of the fact that we didn't have a lot of budget. We had a really cheap-looking bear costume that could only look convincing on a long lens anyway. Because if you got into close-ups, it would have just looked like a bloke in a fur coat. So the budget dictated how Danny ended up sort of treating and shooting it, which, you know, actually made it better, I think.
Yeah, and obviously that's the start of quite a long working relationship with Danny. Did you feel quite simpatico at that time, like, I'm going to want to work with this guy again?
Well, I've been trying to work with him before. He kept turning down everything I sent him. I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. I mean, you know, he was definitely, again, one of the best directors around at the time. And I've been, as I said, Vince and I had been trying to work with him for some time. You know, I formed a really good sort of working relationship with him. I think the fact that I was on my own also helped because it wasn't the sort of ménage à trois kind of situation with an art director and a writer, you know, creative team and a director. It was just the two of us. So, you know, on the shoot, he would literally put a seat next to him for me to sit at. So I got to know him really, really well. I think kids have just come home. Yeah, I got to kind of form a really sort of good working relationship with him on that shoot. And, you know, very, very lovely, but at the same time sort of talented guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did just bombard him with scripts after that, so...
Yeah, he's a great guy. So yeah, that kind of that ad swept all before it. And so why were you there such a short time?
Well, not because I didn't enjoy it, because I did. You know, I mean, I think Sabernetz was a great place at the time and a really great team of people on the management. I mentioned earlier the sort of the lease thing about them wanting to get their MD in place, and they eventually came back and said, you know, we've got our man. It's a guy called Jeremy Pine, who was from Saatchi & Saatchi. He used to run the army business over there. You know, it was a great campaign at the time. I'd been looking for a partner ever since I joined Leah Burnett. I hadn't quite got to a stage where I was sort of confident and happy, sort of working on my own. I suppose in a period of about 9 months, looked to and talked to a number of people. The person I really wanted to get in was Libby, but she left mother and gone back to America at the time, and I think had started a family, so it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, finding anyone to replace Mintz was nigh on impossible. She, for me, was probably the only person who, although she's very different to him, I really, really wanted to work with and felt that, you know, it could have been a great partnership. And I did manage to get her to come over and work on a pitch with me for a couple of weeks, but we couldn't sort of extend it beyond that. So I was still of the mind of sort of, whilst continuing to write on my own, trying to find a partner, but not being able to find anybody. And Jeremy had got a creative from Saatchi called John Messam, who just won a lot of awards for the nursing campaign.
Yeah.
Interested in the sort of start-up with Leith as well. So if I decided to go with them, that, in a way, in my mind, would sort of solve my partner problem as well. And then, you know, there was always just the challenge of being involved in a start-up, something that I'd sort of been interested in, you know, equity and so on, and just a chance to sort of sink or swim, I guess, on our own. And so I decided to have a crack at it. So I resigned from Leo Burnett after only about 9 months. In fact, I hadn't even shot the John West ad when I left. I literally went back a month or two later to do the shoot.
Wow.
Mark and Nick were really, really good about that, allowed me to go on the shoot and do it, so that they overlapped, actually. We opened Leith London, in the old offices that Fallon used to be in on Vigo Street, just by Regent Street.
Oh, yeah.
And we went in that nice space, actually. But, you know, we opened our doors, and literally the first thing through the door was 9/11. And another recession. But, you know, 9/11 obviously just caused chaos, and, you know, the industry went through a really, really difficult time, and it was really tough for us starting out. We managed to get on a few pitches, and I think produced some pretty nice pitch work for about 3 or 4 pitches, and we managed to win one or two sort of little bits and pieces of business. But, you know, we were struggling. It was a tough time for agencies in general, particularly for, you know, little startups like us, with sort of, you know, quite ambitious targets to hit. It put us under pressure from day one. The pressure sort of also created a few sort of tensions amongst us. Although John and I did manage to win a pencil for designing our logo for the agency. That was kind of funny and ironic to suddenly be a pencil-winning graphic designer.
Yeah, in an agency that was seemed to be, you know, beset with troubles, because of the circumstances. But you still get a pencil out of it. Great.
Yeah, it was ironic. I'm quite proud of it, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the time this was going on, the John West ad is just starting to win awards everywhere. So, it wins the ad of the year at the British Arrows. It gets what Creative Circle in those days used to have, a Platinum Award for the ad of the year. It wins DNAD. And I'm getting phone calls from agencies kind of going, how are things at least? John West is doing really well, you know, but, when, you know, are you interested in coming to have a chat with us? from three or four different agencies, and one of them was from Trevor Beattie at TBWA. So, you know, I met Trevor, and I met one or two other people, and I met Trevor down in Cannes, where, again, you know, John West, who won a gold, he'd been tipped to win the Grand Prix, but I honestly felt, the minute that the media started tipping it to win, that it wouldn't win. But, you know, they won a gold down there. And I met Trevor down there, and I just said to him, look, I'm really interested, but I want to give it a year. I want to at least get put in a year to see whether it's going to get any better. So that means, you know, November, December time. Can I give you a call then? So he said, yep, you know, take your time. But, you know, if you want to come any time, I'd love to have you at TBWA. We can talk about, you know, what kind of arrangement that would be if you're really interested. So I waited until that year was up, and I think the next day I called him because, you know, things were pretty much the same, and it was a pity how things were sort of turning out, but it was just really, really tough going, and I thought, if I leave it much longer, I'm not going to be getting phone calls because I'm not going to be picking up any more awards for John West. Somebody else will get that call.
Yeah.
So I met up with Trevor again, and the role sounded really great. I mean, you know, in charge of my own stuff, really, as I put it, approving my own shit. You know, he very generously said, you know, I just want you to make me and the agency look really good. You know, give you some opportunities to work on some great briefs, and you can CD some pieces of business, you know. You know, we just worked out a really good arrangement between us, which, and also, you know, it was the client list at that agency at the time was amazing. You know, you had PlayStation, Adidas, French Connection, Labour Party, and so on. It was, again, a kind of like a sweet shop for a creative. So, yeah, I jumped to TBWA around about Christmas time. And I remember once I'd sort of resigned, and it was all sort of out in the open. He called me up and he said, look, you know, how quickly can you get here? Because we've got a bit of a situation on John Smith. We need a new campaign. So, yet again, I sort of started, you know, as I did, I think, at BBH and at Lowe's. I just walked into a new agency and struck it lucky with getting a good piece of work out very, very quickly. That helps you to sort of settle in, you know, to the new place. So, yeah, the John Smith campaign was the first thing that I was involved with when I joined TBWA.
Was the brief for it? Because obviously it's got a sort of DNA attached to what John Webster did with Arkwright and all that kind of stuff back in the day. Was there a conscious decision to bring that back out again?
Well, the brief was kind of the client, a guy called John Boatier, a really nice, smart guy. I don't know if you remember the campaign that went before it, but it featured that cardboard cutout guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, and the whole campaign for John Smith for years and years obviously had been about it being no nonsense, and the client felt that the cardboard cutout man lying on a sun lounger in Tahiti or wherever he was actually was nonsense. Rather than, he said, you know, we've drifted away from our sort of proper sort of core values and positioning. I want to get back to being no nonsense, being down to earth, being, you know, in Britain rather than on the tropical island. You know, I'm looking for something which sort of takes us back into that space. I think that's the right space for this brand. So, that was the kind of brief. You know, we become nonsensical, get back to being no nonsense again. So, yeah, the creation of a sort of a John Smith character who was a no nonsense guy came from that. And then it was a question of, right, you know, who would you cast in this sort of role?
And was Ricky, was Ricky Gervais on the table at one point?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Peter doesn't know that. Peter thinks that they were written especially for him.
Right. Well, I'm sure he'll listen to this and be but like...
As soon as he said that, of course they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had... I mean, you know, to be honest, Peter was first choice. I mean, Ricky Gervais was probably too famous already by then.
Right.
Simon Pegg was another person that I think we were kind of... was sort of muted as a possible person. But once Peter showed interest... that was it. We were kind of like, no, that's, that feels absolutely right. You know, he's perfect for this. You know, and also just at the right sort of stage of his career where, you know, he was starting to sort of break through, but he wasn't going to completely overshadow the brand and the product. And I think, yeah, it kind of, it was a, all the stars aligned really with that. You know, again, Danny directed them brilliantly. Peter performed brilliantly. His star was in the ascendancy, which, you know, the campaign helped him to become a big name, but he also helped the campaign to sort of, you know, really resonate and become popular with people.
Absolutely. And I guess the other big campaign while you were there in terms of, you know, size and client with the was the PlayStation, Life on PlayStation 1. And that was with Tony McTeer. So you were working with different people at this time, and you know how did that happen?
With Tony was so Tony had come in previously from BBH, and I think it all ended a bit unhappily for him over there. And, he and I got together for a beer or a cup of tea or something, and you know we chatted, and I talked to Trevor about, you know, getting Tony in because he's a very talented guy. So yeah, we hired Tony, and he did Mountain with a girl called Paula Marcantonio, and it won the Grand Prix at Cannes. And Tony formed quite a close relationship with the PlayStation clients to the point where Trevor let Tony CD the PlayStation business. Then another brief came in to do another campaign, and Tony said, you know, to me, do I fancy working on it? So I said, yeah, absolutely. I said, you know, what to you? He said, well, you know, yeah, we could do, or we could just work on it together. So we, I think it was the only thing that I did where I teamed up with somebody else at the time, because I kind of reached the point when I joined TBWO, even though I had the option of finding a partner to work with, I decided that I was going to try and have a go on my own. But working on that brief with Tony was the one time where I did team up with somebody else. So, yeah, we worked on that together. And it was, yeah, again with Danny.
Yeah.
Kleinman, did a great job. Yeah, it was pretty successful, that campaign. I mean, obviously not as successful as Mountain, but it did pretty well and sort of took the campaign in a slightly sort of different direction. It was a series of ads.
Yeah, and straight funny as well, I guess, which is a maybe different tonally, but
you know. Yeah.
And then, and I don't know how the call, because I had quite a few conversations with you around this time, but how did Fallon USA come about at that point? I guess you must have won all the awards going, and they were like, "Who could we get to be the best director here?"
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because I've been at TBWA for about 3 years then, and I was sort of thinking, you know, if I want to sort of. Did I want to sort of step up and run the department? I mean, Trevor made Bill Bungie and myself his sort of deputies, so I was responsible for some business. I still found time to write some stuff myself, but I was also helping with some of the younger teams, helping bring them on, recruiting and so on. So if I wanted to sort of do more of that, as sort of heading up a department, as opposed to sort of being a deputy. You know, I thought there's absolutely no way that Trevor is ever going to leave TBWA. He is TBWA. You know, so if I do want to do that, I'm going to have to consider moving on. But, you know, I've got such a good gig going at TBWA that I couldn't really think of anywhere else in London that I'd rather be or I'd want to be. So, you know, while I was sort of thinking that, I just got a phone call one day, headhunter, saying, you know, would you consider going to the States? And I was like, well, no, I don't think so, not me, I can't imagine myself there. And they said, well, you know, it's Fallon. And I was like, oh, fun, shit, okay. You know, because I was like a Fallon nut. I just, you know, thought the place was amazing. You know, the list of great work from that agency was just sort of endless, really. You know, I loved the Porsche work that they did in Rolling Stone.
Of course, yeah.
Balls, Miller Time, EDS, Cat Herders.
Even the church Buddy, stuff they did.
The Episcopal Church, yeah. Buddy Lee.
Yeah.
You know, MTV, Yucca Brothers, BMW. It just goes on, you know. Incredible work that I, you know, admired for years and years and years. And the description of the job sounded really interesting as well, because what they wanted was someone to be sort of ECD across their three offices in the state. So there's Minneapolis, the sort of, you know, the mothership, the home of the agency, an office in New York, which was doing really, really good work at the time. You know, you remember things like Starbucks Glen,
yeah.
You know, the Time Pendulum poster, and then a little office that they'd set up in LA, partly just as a base for people, because people would be out there shooting and producing.
Yeah.
But also as a quite a smart way of retaining a really, really talented creative guy called Greg Hahn, who I think had had enough of Minneapolis weather and wanted to be something with a bit of sunshine, so he'd wanted to move out west. And so they'd said, well, look, don't leave. You know, we'll put you here and place you in this office and see if organically we can sort of grow it. So it sounded like a really great job to sort of be spending a bit of time between those three cities, three places, you know, working with an agency that I just adored for so long. So before I knew it, I was on the plane out there to meet them and be kind of schmoozed and seduced by them and the reputation and by, you know, the personality of Pat and the various other people. But it just kind of turned into a bit of a disaster for everyone. I think the agency had been without a creative leader for getting on for about a year since David Lubars had left for BBDO.
Yeah.
Even before I arrived, Greg had been lured away to BBDO by David Lubars. So he was gone from LA. So the decision was taken to close that office in LA. And then I got there and very, very quickly, in fact, literally on my very first day, I found out that one of three big accounts were going into review and probably leaving the agency. So that one being BMW, which was like, shit, you know, that's one of the big attractions for me coming here, is that account. So they're off down the road to another agency, closely followed by Lee Jeans and Dyson. and staff are leaving as well. You know, lots of them joining David at BBDO, but you know, people, but it was hemorrhaging staff. And I thought, well, at least it's New York, you know, the one saving grace is they're doing some great work. And maybe I could get some of the guys in New York helping out on some of the briefs from Minneapolis while we try to steady the ship and you know, get things back on track. But then literally 3 months into the job, Ari and Anne, the guys who ran New York, quit to start their own agency. And the decision was taken to close the New York office as well and let everybody there go. So that plan didn't get very far. And I've gone from, you know, this role of New York, Minneapolis, LA to, well, it's Minneapolis now. But at least I suppose I could focus on that office. But, you know, the morale and the work was pretty low at the time. You know, I think people started to look for scapegoats. You know, we needed to get on pitches and win them. You know, looking at timesheets, people were working 100 hours a week. You know, it was not through lack of effort on anybody's part. Needed, obviously, to hire people. I think, you know, on that side of things, we managed to bring in some really good people into the agency. I had a team called Chris and Elisa Wixom from Goodbees. Pete Reed and Carl Broadhurst came out from BWA in London. My now wife, Louisa, from BNP. Yeah. A guy called Brian Tierney, who'd been involved in the mini campaign at Crispin Porter. Lovely guy called Joel Rodriguez, I think, from BBDO. Simon Roseblade came from Fallon, London. So we sort of replenished and replaced a lot of the creatives who'd left with some good people. And then I think, you know, the other thing I felt was that it might ruffle a few feathers, but I needed to get some more fresh work out of the creative department. So I decided to change the way that the briefs were allocated, because it intended to be one team, one brief. And it, to me, it just wasn't working. And I felt that, you know, I'd come from, you know, my background in Simons Palmer and BBH, and even Lowe's was, you know, there was nothing wrong with a bit of healthy competition. And, you know, it doesn't matter where the idea comes from, whether it's, you know, the most senior or the most junior team in the agency. You know, it's just about the best idea winning. So I changed that. And at the same time, I brought in a couple of guys to sort of support me and be sort of my sort of deputies. A guy called Roger Camp, who from Wieden & Kennedy, who had done the Outpost.com work at Cliff Freeman back in the day. And a guy called Mark Taylor from Crispin Porter, who's probably the most awarded creative in America at the time. He did IKEA Lamp, he did Subservient Chicken. You know, he later went back to Crispin and did Small Business Saturday for Amex. Fantastic reel. So I managed to persuade them to come in to sort of support me. But and some of the senior people in the agency and creatives were really okay with this. But some of them also threw their toys out. I remember one of them saying that he didn't want to work into Mark because Mark was younger than he was.
Right.
It's just... That's how divided it had become. It became a bit of a sort of new versus old, local versus outsider sort of situation. And it was so frustrating and disappointing because, you know, like I said, I just loved Fallon and thought Pat was an amazing guy. And, you know, to be there at this sort of difficult time going through this was so difficult for everybody. You know, but I just thought, I've got to stick to my beliefs and try and pull the agency through this. But, you know, I realised I was becoming more and more of a sort of a lone voice, and people were, they were sort of gathering and muttering in the corridors and so on. Yeah, there were some amazing people there as well, some really great people. But there were also people who were determined to sort of make it as difficult as possible, I think. So as I say, it was really hard for me to see this sort of happening. And then, you know, not unexpectedly, but coming up to almost a year in the role, Pat finally decided that, you know, he was going to do something, and his decision was to fire me quite publicly. He also fired Mark Taylor. As I say, it was quite public. I was kind of a bit disappointed that he decided to do it that way. I think he tried to make it look like all the problems that the agency was going through would then go away. But, you know, if you look back now over time, you've seen, of course, that, you know, they didn't really go away because, you know, most of those problems were there when I arrived and were there long after I left as well. So, you know, it was a really sad and difficult time. And, you know, personally, I came back to London feeling really kind of burnt and sort of almost traumatised by the whole experience, to a point where I really didn't want to take another job for a while. I just wanted to sort of lie down and lick my wounds, as it were.
Yeah, so you still ended up doing some really interesting work on freelance, I think, in between that and I guess Saatchi's was the next long-term thing. So was that just keeping your hand in?
Yeah, I mean, so we came back to London. I mean, one of the funny things that happened was that as soon as it was announced, the first phone call I got was from Michael Wall from Fallon in London. And he said, you know, sorry to hear about it, mate, obviously, you know, we were tipped off, but couldn't say anything. But what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to come back to London. He said, come and work for us at Fallon in London. I think he was half joking, maybe like two thirds joking, but it would have been irony, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't really sort of fancy going into a job with sort of the sort of related politics and that straight away. Louisa was pregnant, and I just wanted to sort of spend some time at home with her. But yeah, looking at sort of freelance and talking to a few people about, you know, how that might work, I got asked by Paul Hammersley and Paul Weinberger to go and help out at Red Brick Road, which had just started with the Tesco business, and they were busy pitching for a lot of other business. And I teamed up with Vince again briefly to do a Heineken pitch for them to help them win that. And then when Vince went off to do another directing job, I worked with Dave Dye. So we started finally doing some stuff together, and we worked on a couple of other pitches and briefs at Red Brick Road together. And I think Dave's talked about how it was really quite strange that we just couldn't get Paul Weinberger to buy anything that we did at the time. It was weird. But nevertheless, they were really, really nice to us, the guys at Red Brick Road, and put an arm around me at a time when I needed it, I think. I also did revisit the idea of a startup. I'd spoken to a guy called Dylan Williams, who had come from BBH and had joined Gary Lace at Grey for a while. We talked before I went to Fallon about doing a startup. When I got back from Fallon, I talked to him again. He was now a mother at this time. And we got quite close. We had a third person, I don't think I can name them, but a really good account man that seemed really keen. And I thought at one point, you know, that might be what I was going to do next, was a startup. We had real interest from Chuck Porter and MDC in terms of backing us in London. And it looked like for a while that might happen, but it turned out that the three of us, our personal circumstances were all in slightly sort of different places at the time. and it fizzled out. So Dave and I sort of carried on freelancing. We spent a bit of time at BNP. Trevor at BNB asked us to help out. We did some stuff with Mark Denton and Malcolm Benville for a book that they were launching on Mexican wrestlers. And then I got a call from Ben Priest at Rainey Kelly, who obviously I knew Ben from Lowe's and from TBWA as well, and he was now in charge over there, and he asked if I could help out for a couple of weeks on a pitch that they were doing for the launch of iPlayer for the BBC, ironically against the Fallon London guys. So I went in, helped them on that pitch, and I came up with a campaign with the line making the unmissable unmissable, and they won the business. And that 2 weeks freelance turned into about a year's freelance working there, working up to the launch of iPlayer and various other things I did while I was there, but that was sort of the main project that I kind of got involved with in about a year at Rainey Kelly, and I really enjoyed it. It was great. You know, Ben, I knew Ben really well, and he was really great to work with. And also Mark Rolfe, I got to know, lovely guy.
Yeah.
So and they helped me get my side back.
And Vince shot the Penguins ad for you as well.
He did, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there were a lot of other ideas around sort of the launch of the iPlayer that fell by the wayside. And, the Flying Penguins was the only thing which sort of survived the pitch. But I think what was really good about it is we turned it from just a film or an ad idea into an event around April Fool's Day. To really sort of, you know, generate a lot of sort of interesting press to really sort of land the launch of the iPlayer. So it was so successful and so many people went to have a check out the site that we broke the site. I think it was down for about 24 hours. So, the guys at Rainey Kelly, Ben and Mark and those guys and the whole team on the BBC just helped me get my sort of appetite for the business back.
Great. And how did that then go into a sort of more permanent thing at Saatchi's?
So I was coming towards the end of the sort of contracted time that I was on at Rainey Kelly, and then Robert Senior had been put in charge as the CEO of SSF, Saatchi Fallon, because I think the publicist group had sort of taken the decision that Saatchi in London was underperforming and needed help, and Fallon in America, as we've already talked about, needed a bit of help. Whereas the Fallon office in London and the Saatchi office in New York were doing really well, so they created the SSF and put in Robert from Fallon in London to help Saatchi in London, and somebody, name escapes me, from Saatchi in New York to do the same for Fallon in the US. So Robert, he called up and just said, are you interested in coming in? It's me and Kate. Do you want to come and join us in the brief? It's basically to try and revamp Saatchi. So this appealed to me as a challenge because, first of all, there were similarities with where Fallon was when I went there. And I thought, it's a chance, if this is successful, that I'll at least kind of redeem myself and anyone who's got any question marks about what happened there and accountability and so on, I'll sort of prove to them that, I can redeem myself. And also, it would show that, as far as someone like Maurice Levy was concerned, that he didn't have a problem with me coming back into the publicist group.
Sure.
So, as well as just a chance to work with Robert, Kate, and, in a sort of really interesting challenge, it had that added sort of element to it, really. So, And the big concern for me about taking the job was, by Saatchi standards anyway, how bad or average at best a lot of the work was. And also, you know, at the time, there wasn't a single new business meeting in the diary. And I remember Robert sending a bag of work to my home for me to have a look at. And I let the bag just sit in the corner of the living room for days on end until Louisa, my wife, said, "Are you going to look at that work over there that Robert sent you?" And I just said, "No." So she went, "Why not?" I said, "Because if I look at it, I probably won't take this job." So, you know, I just sort of took it and sort of flung myself in. And our new business effort became the work that we were associated with. You know, there was my work, there was Kate's track record, there was Robert's track record at Fallon. And we used that as our kind of, you know, we acted like a startup, basically. That was kind of how we approached new business, sort of, because, you know, we just made it a more interesting sort of proposition, really, because I think, you know, the agency had sort of lost its way to a point where you question why is anybody coming to the agency at that point. I mean, one of the other attractions for me on the job was that we could recruit our other partners, so we weren't inheriting or trying to gel with sort of an existing team. So Robert, Kate and I got to bring in and choose Richard Huntington, who was the strategy director, Mike Rabello, who came in as the MD from the Singapore office of Saatchi's. And that team was in place for about 4 years, during which time, you know, we had quite a bit of success. You know, initially, and thankfully, sort of quite early on with T-Mobile, the new campaign of Lice for Sharing, which, you know, we ended up being out of the year at British Telly 2 years in a row.
Amazing.
We won, you know, quite a lot of Lions with that. You know, I'm quite conscious that some people in the business didn't like it, but it was really, really popular. Populist.
Yeah.
And it did a fair number of awards. You know, on the new business side, things picking up. We wanted this from Walls and ended up doing some good work for Walls, I think. We started working with Cadbury, which the famous Flake episode, or the infamous Flake episode, you know, and all the way through to winning the launch of EE, winning Direct Line, which, you know, has been hugely effective as a campaign. You know, there was a fair amount of success at that time.
From the outside, it seemed like, you know, it sort of got its mojo back with you guys.
I think it did for a while. I think, you know, things changed a little bit. I think when Robert was promoted, because, you know, he then became sort of CEO for the whole of EMEA. Never quite worked out what that stands for. Is it Europe, Middle East, Africa?
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we had less of him. Mike went back to run Sydney, Australia. Magnus came over from Fallon. And personally, I started to feel a bit more detached from the work again. You know, a phrase I used quite often was promoted beyond usefulness, was how I felt. So eventually, after 7 and a bit years at Saatchi's, I decided to sort of move on and see what other opportunities would present themselves. But yeah, it was a good and interesting time, and I do feel, at least, that I sort of partly redeemed myself for what happened in the States with how things turned out at Saatchi in London.
Definitely, and that was the only time I've worked kind of with/for you as well, and I really enjoyed my time at Saatchi's there, and I think, you know, with Rob and Andy it was really good, and you and Kate were always fantastic, and so. Yeah, it was. I can attest from the inside. It was a really good place to work. So, thanks for that.
Well, you're welcome. It was good having you there.
Yeah,
and Adam too. I think we nearly got you killed in Nigeria, didn't we?
We just got out by the skin of our teeth. But you know, anything for Guinness, you know, whatever we could help. You know.
Yeah.
So what's the post-Archie's situation been like?
Well, so, I sort of didn't know what would happen, really. I just sort of went, hello, is anyone interested in sort of talking to me? But in my mind, I had a couple of possible situations that, you know, I thought could be interesting. And they were either that I would go somewhere smaller, if they wanted me to sort of head up the creative department, I wanted it to be somewhere where I could still get my hands dirty, you know, help the teams, maybe produce some work. So the agency needed to be of a certain size, not too big, so that I'd be able to do that. Or that I would go somewhere much bigger and just forego the sort of headache and heartache of running a creative department and nature problems, and whether we're going to help the office in Romania or what, paint the walls in the new office, whatever, and just concentrate again on the work, because I sort of missed it. And as it happened, you know, I got to have conversations with agencies on both those sort of ideas, really. And the bigger agency, obviously, being BBH, and, you know, quite quickly, not just because I was talking to, like, great people at BBH, like Nick Gill and Ben Fennell and all those guys, you know, because if you're going to do something like what I just described, you know, why wouldn't you do it somewhere like BBH? But also, I think, just quite quickly, I worked out that that was my preference, really, to get my head down again and sort of, you know, just try and produce some great work and try and leave as much of the politics out of it as possible. So, you know, before I knew it, I mean, much sooner than I expected, I was sort of back in an agency again, one that I'd left about 20 years earlier, and I finally made it to Kingly Street, because I left BBH at Great Pulteney Street just as they were about to move to Kingly Street. So I just arrived about 20 years later than everyone else at the new building. So there I was back at BBH. Ben Fennell, now the CEO, having been a grad trainee on Lynx when I left him. And, kind of getting stuck into some of the opportunities that were there at the agency that are there. And enjoying kind of, you know, getting my hands dirty again. And, you know, I've had some really interesting opportunities, but quite quickly started working with UN on a pitch for an online betting company called BWIN, so helped him to win that. And then I think the next interesting thing that came up was the opportunity to work with British Airways and Comic Relief on the safety video, the onboard safety video, which was great to do because it was a longer format, not really an ad, I guess, more of a piece of sort of entertainment. So it was really good to sort of do something in that area as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously we're in a completely different place than we were when you started, and, you know, through much of your career, and I think, you know, having adapting to that is where things are right now. But I mean, having gone through it again for the last couple of hours and chatting with you, I mean, the work you've produced is just a huge amount of fantastic stuff. And I think it's interesting to see how that's the ups and downs of where that's come in a career. Because it's not always like, oh, I created amazing ads and then the next wonderful thing happened, then the next wonderful thing happened. You tried different stuff. Some of it worked, some of it didn't. But yeah. I think that's part of having a career in this business now.
Yeah, my wife always says you should only regret the things that you never tried. I sometimes disagree with that, but I think she's right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it hasn't all been plain sailing. It was tough to begin with. And then, you know, I went through a few sort of difficult times, but I think, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And, you know, I've been fortunate to work with some amazing people as well, so anybody that I've worked with that's been involved in all the work that we talked about now, thank you for that.
Yeah, it's a great bunch. I mean, I think we're up to the present day. So unless is there anything else you wanted to say or mention about how things are?
Oh God, I'll just give my voice a rest now. Yeah, I don't think so. Is there anything else you want to ask me?
No. I this has definitely been the most thorough conversation I've had, and really because, you know, when I've seen...
Not as thorough as Dave Dye. I mean, that was like living his life in real time.
No, having said that, yeah, I did do 5 hours with Dave. So yeah, that was the most thorough one. And then Dave did 2 hours of himself as well on his own podcast. So if anyone wants to know Dave Dye's career, my podcast and his, you'll get it all. But hopefully you'll have a chat with him as well, because he's much more thorough than I am. But even for me, this was like a great chance to go through and discuss what was behind some of my favorite ads of the last, you know, 20, 30 years. So thanks very much for making them. And thanks for A, being an inspiration, B, producing that great work. And also, you know, I feel like you've been a sort of, I don't want to say guardian angel, but, you know, you asked me to judge DNAD and things like that. So I just got a lot to be thankful for you for as well, Paul. So this is a great opportunity to say that.
Well, you're welcome. I'm sure you deserved it.
I'm sure I did. great. Well, I'll put all this together and I can send it to you before I put it out. There's no rush or anything. And, you know,
cool.
Thanks again for your time.
You're welcome, Ben. Thanks ever so much for asking me.
Okay. Cheers, Paul.
This is a podcast that watch Christmas.